Welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, I'm Janelle Eckerman, and today I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 6, 2025. And from the front page, there are three large photographs, and the heading is Lake Decatur, Casting the Stress Away. And the caption with the first photo is of Lindsay James, spends part of the day Monday, May 5, fishing in Lake Decatur. James said the activity is relaxing and provides time to meditate and practice patience. And the second photo is captioned, Lindsay James casts a line while fishing in Lake Decatur on Monday, May 5. And the last photo is captioned, Lindsay James adds homemade bait while fishing in Lake Decatur. And those photos were courtesy of Joseph Ressler Photos from the Herald and Review. And also from the front page, the next article is Reuse of Coal Plant Sites Rising. Sudden strong demand for powering AI apps and cloud computing. And the article is written by Mark Levy. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Coal-fired power plants, long an increasingly money-losing proposition in the US, are becoming more valuable now that the suddenly strong demand for electricity to run big tech's cloud computing and artificial intelligence applications set off a full-on sprint to find new energy sources. President Donald Trump, who pushed for U.S. energy dominance in the global market and suggested that coal can help meet surging power demand, is wielding his emergency authority to entice utilities to keep older coal-fired plants online and producing electricity. While some utilities already were delaying the retirement of coal-fired plants, the scores of coal-fired plants that shut down the past couple years or will be shut down in the next couple years, are the object of growing interest from tech companies, venture capitalists, states and others competing for electricity. And this article is then continued onto page A2. That's because they have a very attractive quality. High voltage lines connecting to the electricity grid they aren't using anymore and that a new power plant could use. That ready-to-go connection could enable a new generation of power plants, gas, nuclear, wind, solar, or even battery storage to help meet the demand for new power sources more quickly. For years, the bureaucratic nightmare around building new high-voltage power lines ensnared efforts to get permits for such interconnections for new power plants, said John Jacobs, an energy policy analyst for the Washington, D.C.-based Bipartisan Policy Center. They are very interested in the potential here. Everyone sort of sees the writing on the wall for the need for transmission infrastructure, the need for clean, firm power, the difficulty with siting projects, and the value of reusing brownfield sites, Jacobs said. Coincidentally, the pace of retirements of the nation's aging coal-fired plants was projected to accelerate at a time when electricity demand is rising for the first time in decades. The Department of Energy, in a December report, said its strategy for meeting that demand includes reusing coal plants, which have been unable to compete with a flood of cheap natural gas while being burdened with tougher pollution regulations aimed at its comparatively heavy emissions of planet-warming greenhouse gases. There are federal incentives as well, such as tax credits and loan guarantees, that encourage the redevelopment of retired coal-fired plants into new energy sources. Todd Schnitzler, President and CEO of the Electric Power Supply Association, which represents independent power plant owners, said he expected Trump's executive orders will mean some coal-fired plants run longer than they would have, but they are still destined for retirement. Data center developers are reporting a year-long wait in some areas to connect to the regional electricity grid. Rights-of-way approvals to build power lines can also be difficult to secure, given objections by neighbours who may not want to live near them. Stephen DeFrank, chairman of the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, said he believes rising energy demand made retiring coal-fired plants far more valuable. That's especially true now that the operator of the congested Mid-Atlantic power grid reconfigured its plans to favour sites like retired coal-fired plants as a shortcut to meet demand, DeFrank said. That's going to make these properties more valuable because now, as long as I'm shovel-ready, these power plants have that connection already established. I can go in and convert it to whatever, DeFrank said. In Pennsylvania, the vast majority of conversions is likely to be natural gas because Pennsylvania sits atop the prolific Marcellus Shale Reservoir, DeFrank said. And the next article from the front page is US Politics, Pritzker, AOC emerge as Dem leaders, and it was written by Bill Barrow, Atlanta, the billionaire heir and the former bartender. Many Democrats have been in and out of the spotlight as the party looks for effective counters to President Donald Trump and his second administration. But two disparate figures, Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois and Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, have seen their national profiles rise by delivering messages that excite a demoralized and fractured party. The governor, a 60-year-old heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune, and the congresswoman, the 35-year-old with working-class roots, both won their first elections in 2018. Both have urged mass resistance and accused their party of not fighting more. Each has stood out enough to draw sharp retorts from Trump loyalists. But as messengers, Pritzker and Ocasio-Cortez could not be more different, and the article is then continued onto page A2. And their arguments, despite some overlap, are distinct enough to raise familiar questions for Democrats. Should they make their challenges to Trump about threats to democracy and national stability, as Pritzker has done, or portray him as a corrupt billionaire exasperating an uneven economy, as Ocasio-Cortez does? And beyond the message itself, what qualities should the best messenger have? What links them, said one prominent Democrat, is assertiveness. People want Trump and Trumpism to be met with equal passion and force, said National Urban League President Mark Morial, a former New Orleans mayor deeply connected in Democratic politics. On that front, he added, Pritzker and Ocasio are both effective national figures, but in very different ways. Pritzker, an establishment power player. Pritzker was born at the bridge of the baby boomers and Generation X into a sprawling family now entrenched in Democratic politics. Like Trump, he inherited great wealth, but he lambasts the president as a poser on working class issues. He chaired Illinois' Human Rights Commission before running for governor. In office, he has signed an Illinois minimum wage increase and is an ally of unions. His family's hotels are unionized, making them regular options for official Democratic Party events. When Democratic President Joe Biden exited the 2024 campaign, Pritzker was floated as a replacement. He made no visible moves, quickly backed Vice President Kamala Harris, and acted as the de facto host of her nominating convention in his home state. Take it from an actual billionaire. Trump is rich in only one thing, stupidity, Pritzker said in Chicago. Since Harris's defeat, Pritzker has behaved like a future candidate. One of the nation's highest-profile Jewish politicians, he fired up liberals by comparing the Trump administration to the Third Reich. If you think I'm overacting and sounding the alarm too soon, consider this. It took the Nazis 1 month, 3 weeks, 2 days, 8 hours, and 40 minutes to dismantle a constitutional republic, the governor said his joint budget and State of the State address on February 19. All I'm saying is when the five-alarm fire starts to burn, every good person better be ready to man a post with a bucket of water if you want to stop it from raging out of control. Addressing party faithful in the traditional early nominating state of New Hampshire, Pritzker bemoaned do-nothing Democrats, called for party honchos to set aside decades of stale decorum and urged voters into the streets. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilisation, for disruption, but I am now, he said. Democrats, he added, must castigate Republicans on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. It was enough for senior Trump aide Stephen Miller to accuse Pritzker of inciting violence. Pritzker wasted no time returning the volley, calling it terrible hypocrisy for Trump allies to complain given the Capitol siege on January 6, 2021 and Trump's pardons of their rioters. AOC, a progressive party crasher. Ocasio-Cortez is a millennial progressive who earned degrees in international relations and economics and worked as a waiter and bartender before entering politics. With support from the Progressive Working Families Party, she ousted a top House Democrat, Joe Crowley, in a 2018 primary. Like Trump, she leverages millions of social media followers. Also, like Trump, she is an economic populist. But she comes from the left wing of US politics and without the anti-immigration and cultural conservatism of Trump's right wing or the alliances with billionaire business and tech elites. She has recently headlined Fighting Oligarchy tour with Senator Bernie Sanders, IVT, a two-time presidential candidate. The tour has drawn tens of thousands of people across the country, notably including reliably Republican states, often with overflow crowds outside many stops. Ocasio-Cortez's next political move seems less certain than Pritzker's. She is seen as a potential primary challenger to Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader from New York, and she only recently became old enough to be constitutionally eligible for the presidency. But she appears poised to inherit the mantle of the 83-year-old Sanders movement. She freely criticizes Trump, but she leans more heavily into broader economic and social critiques that she's made since her first House bid and that Sanders has offered for decades. For years, we have known that our political system has slowly but surely become dominated by big money and billionaires, and time after time, we have seen how our government and laws are more responsive to corporations and lobbyists than everyday people and voters, she said in Folsom, California. She advocated for living wages, stable housing, guaranteed health care, and blasted the agenda of dark money to keep our wages low and to loot our public goods like Social Security and Medicare. She also played up her roots. From the waitress who is now speaking to you today, I can tell you, impossible is nothing. Little consensus on the left. Ocasio-Cortez and Pritzker are allied against a common opponent, Trump, and not each other. Advisers to Ocasio-Cortez and Pritzker did not respond to questions. Adam Green, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, argues Pritzker could be more attractive as a traitor to his class in the tradition of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. An East Coast patrician, Roosevelt authored the New Deal's federal expansion to combat the Great Depression of the 1930s. How powerful would it be if a billionaire was the one helping to lead the charge against corrupt billionaires and corrupt billionaire corporations that are trying to crack the Constitution and loot the American people, Green said, adding that continued silence on billionaire issues should disqualify Pritzker. We have to be speaking to the shake-up-the-system vibe that people want to see. Matt Bennett, a co-founder of Third Way, which typically backs centrist Democrats, countered that Pritzker could bring a more stable version of Trump's argument that his wealth and success is an asset. Trump's biggest liability, Bennett said, is chaos that negatively affects people's lives. People are very mad at Elon Musk, but not because he's rich, Bennett said, of the Tesla CEO, who is leading Trump's Department of Government Efficiency. They're mad at him because he's vandalizing our government and doing it in a destructive way. A relative of the governor, Rachel Pritzker, chairs Third Way's Board of Trustees. Ocasio-Cortez is often criticized by more moderate Democrats, including Michigan Senator Alyssa Slotkin, who has also positioned herself as a thought leader in the party. Slotkin recently suggested the word oligarchy didn't resonate with working-class voters. It was an implicit rebuke of the Ocasio-Cortez-Sanders tour. Shortly after Slotkin's comments about oligarchy, Ocasio-Cortez posted on X, "Plenty of politicians on both sides of the aisle feel threatened by rising class consciousness." Bennett said Democrats who emerge as party leaders, including the 2028 nominee, will be those who offer solutions for voters' frustration over their needs not being met. It's a notion that Green insisted is indistinguishable from criticising the billionaire class, along with the tax and labour policies that drive wealth and income gaps in the US. Whatever direction Democrats choose, Bennett said, Ocasio-Cortez has secured her place as a national voice. "She's very good at what she does. She's formidable," he said. "And anybody on the centre-left who denies that is just kidding themselves." I'll now continue on to page A2 in local news. And the first article is Decatur Duck Derby Announces Winners. And it was written by Donette Beckett, Decatur. The rainy weather this past weekend was ideal for ducks, including the thousands of rubber ducks launched on Saturday for the annual Children's Museum of Illinois Duck Derby. Toshwood York claimed the $3,000 first place prize. Finishing second and receiving $1,500 was Brandy Myers, and third place and the $500 prize went to Jerry Young. The event is a fundraiser for the Children's Museum and sponsored by Jurga Pediatric Dentistry. Due to the rainy weather, a few of the outdoor activities scheduled for the Saturday event were postponed. The museum will reschedule a family fun day this summer with a few of the activities, including a bounce house and petting zoo. Visitors should check the museum's social media sites for updates. And the next article in local news is Decatur man alleges he was ordered out of moving truck, and it was written by Tony Reed. Decatur. A Decatur man was hit in the face with a gun after he refused to jump out of a truck travelling at 35 miles per hour, police report. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said the 58-year-old victim told officers he had been a passenger in the vehicle of a man who gave him a ride from the Oasis Day Centre for the Homeless on West Cerro Gordo Street. Just before 5 p.m. Friday, as the vehicle turned onto West King Street, the trouble had started. The gentleman who was giving the victim a ride told him to jump out of the truck while it was still travelling at approximately 35 miles per hour, Closen said. The victim said the suspect then grabbed a handgun and struck him one time in the face, causing a minor injury. The truck then stopped, at which time the victim took it upon himself to exit the situation. The truck was last seen eastbound on Green Street. Closen described the injury to the victim's face as minor and said investigating officers were left with the impression there may be more to this incident. He said the suspect is described as black, aged between 42 and 43, about 5'8" tall, and of skinny build with short hair. And the next article, also written by Tony Reed, is Decatur man robbed as he sat in his car, police say. Decatur. Police said a Decatur man sitting in his parked car near the intersection of North Church Street and West Prairie Avenue suddenly found himself confronted by an armed robber. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said the suspect approached the man around noon Thursday and pulled a handgun which he pointed at the victim's head. The suspect says something like, "Give me your money and you are not going to get hurt," said Closen. The victim handed over a wallet with an undisclosed amount of cash in it and the suspect left on foot. The victim was not injured. The robber was described as a black man about 30 years old, wearing a black hooded sweatshirt with a hood pulled over his head and black sweatpants. The victim thought the man possibly had a dreadlocks hairstyle. Anyone with information can reach police at 217 424 2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217 423 8477. Crime Stoppers pays cash rewards for information leading to an arrest and conviction. And also from page A2, our commitment to accuracy. See an error in our reporting? We want you to tell us about issues regarding accuracy and fairness. Contact 217 421 7976 or sperry@heraldreview.com. Past corrections are at heraldreview.com/corrections. A correction is listed. Kayla Marsh was among those recognised by the Mount Zion Chamber of Commerce with a NEXT Award, which highlight up-and-coming professionals. Marsh was misidentified in the story. Mount Zion honours local businesses. On A3 of the Saturday, May 3, Herald and Review. And moving along in today's reading of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 6, 2025, I'll continue on to page A3 in local news. And the first article is Oddfellow Rebecca Home. And the title is Homicide Charged in Nursing Home Crash. And it was written by Rob Stroud. Mattoon. The driver of the vehicle that crashed through the wall of a Mattoon nursing home, killing a resident, has been charged with reckless homicide and aggravated driving under the influence. The Coles County State's Attorney's Office filed those felony charges Monday morning against Curtis A. Meadows, 54, of Neoga, following his arrest by the Mattoon Police Department. Police Chief Sam Gaines told the JGTC on Monday that Meadows is still in police custody at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Centre, where he is undergoing treatment for injuries sustained in the crash. Gaines said he anticipates that Meadows will be released from the hospital later Monday and then booked into custody of the Coles County Jail. Due to Meadows being at the hospital and unable to attend his scheduled detention hearing on Monday, this hearing was continued until Tuesday, May 6. Meadows was arrested at 12:05 p.m. Friday, shortly after emergency crews were dispatched to Oddfellow Rebecca Home, 201 Lafayette Avenue East. Mattoon Fire Chief Jeff Hilligoss has said crews arrived to find a car completely inside of the building and initial reports of four possible victims, two residents in the room, a visitor, and the male driver of the car. Hilligoss said the visitor was located unharmed. Both residents had to be extricated from the crash scene by firefighters. Coles County Coroner Ed Schneers confirmed on Monday that one of the residents, Sharon L. Harpster, 82, of Charleston, died at the scene. Schneers noted that her husband, Lawrence Larry D. Harpster, 84, of Charleston, died on Thursday at the Oddfellow Rebecca Home of natural causes. The second resident, an 86-year-old woman, was airlifted to Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, where she was listed in critical condition Friday afternoon. Gaines said on Monday that he has not received an update on her condition. Speaking to the media on Friday, Gaines said at about 11:28 a.m., a vehicle left Logan Street and travelled south across the front lawn of the facility before crashing into a residential room on the north end of the nursing home portion of the building. Marks were left in the grass showing the path the vehicle, a Nissan Pathfinder, took from the roadway to where it stopped. The Mattoon Police Department is being assisted by an Illinois State Police accident reconstruction team. The Lakeland College Police Department, the Charleston Fire Department, and the Coles County Sheriff's Department also provided assistance with this incident. Our hearts go out to all those affected, and we extend our deepest condolences to the family and loved ones of the individual who lost their life, Oddfellow Rebecca Holm said in a statement on Friday. Our team and emergency personnel responded swiftly, and we are grateful for their prompt and professional efforts. The safety and well-being of our residents, staff and community continue to be our highest priority. The statement went on to say, we are actively assessing the situation in cooperation with city and state emergency response officials to gather all necessary details, determine the cause, and ensure all appropriate safety protocols are being followed. In the meantime, we are offering support to our team members and residents on site to help them cope with the emotional impact of this incident. And also from the same page, the next article is Police Accuse Two Men of Reckless Discharge, and it's written by Tony Reed. Decatur. Two men who decided to step outside a house in Decatur and improve their aim by taking pot shots at tin cans with a .22 caliber rifle were both arrested, police report. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said the two men, aged 38 and 35, were booked on preliminary charges accusing them of the reckless discharge of a firearm. Closen said the incident happened just after 10 a.m. Thursday in the 400 block of East Johnson Avenue. Police patrols had been alerted by a frightened neighbour who heard the sound of repeated gunfire. It appears these two gentlemen just came outside and decided to have some target practice, the sergeant said. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. And briefly from Today in History from the E-Edition Plus. Today's highlight. On May 6, 1937, the hydrogen-filled German airship Hindenburg caught fire and crashed while attempting to dock at Lakehurst, New Jersey. 35 of the 97 people on board and one crew member on the ground were killed. And in 1882, President Chester Alan Arthur signed the Chinese Exclusion Act, which barred Chinese labourers from immigrating to the US for 10 years. The act would remain in effect until 1943. And in 1889, the Eiffel Tower opened to the public as part of the Paris World's Fair. And in 1935, the Works Progress Administration was established under an executive order signed by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. And in 1994, the Channel Tunnel connecting England and France beneath the English Channel was officially opened in a ceremony attended by Queen Elizabeth II and French President François Mitterrand. And in 2004, President George W. Bush apologised for the abuse of Iraqi prisoners by American soldiers at Abu Ghraib prison, but rejected calls for Defence Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's resignation, and that information was from the Associated Press. I'll take a short break now and return with the second half of today's reading of selections from the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 6, 2025. Read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.